Haskell, Chief of Programs and Transitional Services, Department of Corrections.
Thank you very much. Jimmy Paluso, Chair of this working group.
Charlie Cofer, Public Defender and Co-Chair of the working group.
Michael Boylan, Chair of the full committee.
And then we've got a few folks on Zoom, if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
Hi, good morning. Michelle Khalil, County Court Judge.
Thank you, Michelle. And Monet?
Good morning. Monet Holder, Senior Director of Advocacy and Programs at Florida Rising.
Excellent. I believe we have a few folks that are unable to make it today. It turned out to be a pretty busy Friday. It's a pretty busy one for us, too, in the jail world. Just want to quickly distribute out the working group meeting summary from last week. Please take a look at it. If there are suggestions or changes you'd like to make, please bring them up to Tyler. It was a pretty great meeting, and then we also had our tour of UF Health, which I thought was quite enlightening. One of the things that was suggested was for us to go to Nashville, and I realized that in about a month and a half, the Jaguars play in Nashville, so I thought maybe kill two birds with one stone, depending on where we are in the record. Maybe I would go up there and actually try to get a tour and schedule something with HDR. I don't know if anyone else is going to be in a similar mindset, depending on the status of the team, I imagine. But
I'm already scheduled to go.
Oh, there you go. All right. Well, if you and I go, we have to do a notice meeting. So it'll be one awkward notice meeting. We'll have to have a court reporter or something like that. So at the very least, if other people are kind of maybe in that same similar mindset, if we want to do kind of a group scheduled event going up there, I know that's an interesting ask to say in front of everyone. It's just a personal thing that I'm going to do up there. But while I'm there, I intend to go see the jail and get a tour. So just kind of keep that in mind. Again, if there are any suggestions that you want to make, please bring it up with Tyler by the end of the meeting. I do quickly want to hand over control to Councilmember Boylan. Do you have anything you'd like to put out, sir, while you're here?
I appreciate the opportunity. With respect to the Nashville trip, if we can get some background information on what the facility is and how it encompasses all four areas, that would be helpful. And warranted that, because you intrigued my mind about possibly going.
Yep.
As you know, we are going to be hosting a special meeting of the full committee at 11:30 today. I think it's 11:30. Yep. To take a look at some of the immediate needs, both with respect to the Police Memorial Building and the Pretrial Detention Center, and so that will be happening 11:30. At which point in time we'll be speaking with Council President and the Mayor's Office with respect to some reallocation of funds or draw from the operating reserve funds to address some of the immediate needs that both facilities have. It became apparent to all of us in our tours of the respective facilities and appreciation and speaking with the folks who live and work in there every day that we can't afford to wait on these things. We need to move forward on them. So I look forward to that conversation and appreciate you being there today.
Thank you, sir. I will be there. I might be there right at 11:30. I might be a little bit late. There's the Vistar Veterans Memorial Arena. They're unveiling a veterans monument that they're putting up there. So I did want to kind of swing by for that. That's why I have my lovely Navy shirt on. On to the tour of the UF Health facility. I just kind of want to get people's comments or thoughts as they were walking around. I know that I don't think I've ever been to UF Health in general for care or anything else. I'm lucky, I suppose. But that was certainly my first time kind of walking around the facility, and they made it very clear that they're in the midst of doing massive renovations. And we know that, and we know that that's going to be a good thing. I will first say, on a very positive note, I really thought the facility, I'm not going to call it the JSO medical facility, but the standalone facility, the standalone clinic, seemed like it was incredibly good repair. It seemed very well run. It seemed safe and wise to kind of be in that standalone area, and I don't think that's going to change much even as the renovations go through. But when it comes to the ER in general, I mean, I saw so many folks crowded together, and there was no distinguishing marks to show who was brought in kind of by JSO and by the public. There was a lot of overcrowding, it seemed, which may go into a larger theme in our city, our country, our state, about the state of healthcare. But it it was just a lot to see, people kind of put together like that. And it's certainly got to be a strain on UF Health. We talked a lot about, in previous meetings, the potential to have an infirmary in any sort of new jail that we may build. And I frankly thought more than ever, after getting that tour, that's probably a phenomenal suggestion. And it's one that I believe Nashville, I know that the Nashville jail, and I know it's not called the Nashville jail, I think was it Dodson County or whatever, their county facility, I think, has an entire mental health wing, and then I think a relatively large infirmary with several beds. And somebody correct me if I'm wrong. But that might be a really good model kind of moving forward on, especially if we can get staffing for that, which I know is always the big question mark. But were there any kind of thoughts, by anyone in this room while taking that tour? Any questions, concerns, thoughts that they may have had? Councilman Boylan, I know you were there for quite a while.
Thank you. I did appreciate, the work, but I also, as you said, undersized in terms of the emergency area. That needs to be addressed. The encouraging news, too, that we did hear are some positive comments about the new health care facility organization that's working with them as well. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's positive. With respect to the infirmary itself, and I think the concern JSO has raised with me is the wherewithal of JSO to be responsible for those who were in that facility. So obviously that's going to have to be something we need to address separate. And Director Goff might want to speak to that at some point to say we are in the business of managing those incarcerated, in terms of providing the kind of services we're talking about. That may be a different conversation. But as in terms of the facility itself, I agree with you. I think infirmary in the housing working group, they're also looking at that as a viable option.
Excellent. Mr. Public Defender, Judge Cofer. Do you? I assume that you've been in that facility quite a few times, at least in the ER.
I have. It's been a long time, and the issue with many of our local facilities that deal with indigent care is they're oftentimes inundated with people coming in with colds and minor illnesses that really aren't emergency room set. If you go over to Memorial Hospital, it's incredibly bad, but. My view has been that many years ago at the Bay Street Jail, there was an infirmary, and they handled a great number of people. It was in-house. I guess the shift over to not having a real infirmary happen with this new jail, and I think that was probably a bad idea. There's so many inmates that need care that's kind of between just first aid and needing hospitalization, isolation needs for people with influenza, communicable diseases, that sort of thing is important. People that have ongoing care like diabetes and even kidney issues where they have to have dialysis and that sort of stuff. I don't know where that falls, but I think the concept of having an infirmary built in is an important one. Now, how it's managed and dealt with, that's a different thing altogether. And that's kind of out of my bailiwick. But I think we'd be remiss if we don't give strong look on having an infirmary in the jail facility.
I'm thank you for your comments. To the point you made at the end there, I don't know what the staffing looks like, who's there. I even brought it up to UF Health. I said, hey, if there was more beds and they were able to have more of an infirmary type setting in any sort of new jail, like, do you guys manage that? Do we get another contract? Does JSO manage that? Like, how does that work? And they said, we'd be more than happy to kind of look into that and what that may look like for us. Because, yeah, that's a new hurdle or a new contract that may need to be drawn up or expanded upon. So it's kind of fascinating. We do have friends from HDR here. I just wanted to make sure I made note of that. I wanted to verify. So the new facility in the Nashville area, does that have an infirmary attached to it?
I believe it does.
Okay. All right. I just want to make sure. That's why I thought. I didn't want to speak out of turn. Chief Pascal, do you have any thoughts?
Good morning, everyone. Pretty much the same as each of you have said. That was my second time going over there. My previous position was the Assistant Chief of Support Services, so my staff was actually the liaison and some of the security that was over there. I was also over the First Coast Security, which is at contracted, our contracted security. And that big open area, we've always felt that that was unsafe. There's, as you said, no separation between who's there for what, and it kind of put everybody, it's a lot of unease to see all of that over there. Kudos to the staff over there that, you know, try and move people around and make that separation, but I think with them expanding, and that should help, and I agree with us needing an infirmary in-house.
And I do want to clarify to anyone who wasn't there. I mean, like, it to me, it just kind of looked like a relatively interesting situation. But, like, I didn't see any patients or any individuals in beds that seemed, like, upset to be what they all seemed very grateful that they were able to get care. It just, to me, it was like an open bay, and it was a lot of folks. It felt like, not something that I'd normally consider when I think about. It felt more like a triage rather than a you know. Otherwise, I do want to make note that we have Director Goff here, and I really appreciate you coming. I know you've got probably a busy day, and your Friday morning shouldn't always be taken up by stuff like this, and thank you, Assistant Chief, for being here as well. Before I jump to you, I do want to ask, Monet, do you have any comments that you want to make? I know you were at the tour as well.
No, I don't have any comments I want to make at this time.
Excellent. All right. So now we will go to you guys. I believe you're going to have a presentation to kind of talk about the different rehabilitation programs that currently exist in the current jail and up at the Pea Farm. Those are of huge interest to us as we've kind of moved a little bit beyond. We've talked about intake, we've talked about adjudication, we've gotten a really good grasp of that. I believe we have at least I've learned far more than I ever knew about the criminal justice system than ever. I really now want to kind of tackle in the next couple of meetings what rehabilitation methods currently exist in our city and even in our state, what kind of partners we've brought in, and then how we either expand upon them, make them more robust, things like that. If we were to build a new jail, how do we make sure that rehabilitation and ensuring recidivism is lowered is a major priority of ours. So thank you both for being here, and take it away.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having us today. I appreciate it. Just to touch back on the infirmary, my viewpoint would be have an infirmary.
Can you press? Sorry. Okay. Yeah, when you're green, you're good.
Green. I thought red was good. Okay. Green, good. So, if my take would be an infirmary would be most ideal for the reasons y'all explained. Also, it would help us not transport as many people back into the hospital every day. For the things like Councilman Boland said, the dialysis, those type of things. Hillsborough has an in-house infirmary. But like you said, Councilman Peluso, with that would come additional costs for the additional medical care. We'd have to, talk with UF Health, our medical provider, to see what the best option would be as far as that. But there are definitely some benefits to having an infirmary in-house in the jail for both sides, for us as officers as well as the inmates that are there. So thank you for that. So wanted to get an overview of the programs that we currently offer through GSO at Montgomery Correctional Facility. So I brought my resident expert in to Assistant Chief Prescott is over MCC. So he has a vast knowledge of all the programs that are offered up there and the benefits of those programs. So I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you for allowing me to talk today. I'll start speaking in reference to the NESER program, which is the National Center for Construction Education and Research. This is a national program that we utilize at Montgomery Correctional Center. It basically is 9 modules in which that individual receives training in reference to basic skills in reference to construction, rigging, and things of that nature. They can enter at any point within the program. It's recognized nationally. When they leave, it's put into a national database so that this individual can go out and find employment. This is one of the things that they can provide to a potential employer. The instructors over the course itself also provides the individual with the number of work hours. Say if it was in such as in the welding, which is going to be the shield arc welding aspect of it, we have on the facility. It benefits them because we do strength tests. We do bend tests with these individuals. Based off the skill level of which they have is where we start them in that program. We identify that based off of proxy scores, what we refer to as the ACT, and the TABE test. So we're identifying if this individual was struggling with reading or something of that nature, we know where to start that individual into that kind of program to help them along. They can participate in those kind of programs as well as, say, the National Center for Construction Education and Research Program. We have the Into Work. This is basically a student guide, if anyone would like to take a look at that, of what the individual would be receiving. This is through a partnership with the Aramark, which is one of our vendors. It's basic training in reference to skills and kitchen use and things of that nature, tools. This is a 10-week program. It requires that the individual have at least 90 days with us at the time, or 120 days at the time of starting this program.
So they must. They must
county sentence time. Okay, so they have to be county sentenced on all these programs, and it's completely voluntary. So I want to make sure that's clear too, as well.
So you need to have 120 days or more left on your sentence.
Correct, sir. So now, given that we can also run concurrent with something like the matrix, where they would sentence into a matrix without, or substance abuse without the potential for early release, we can also work them into this program, which helps them. The National Center for Construction Education and Research is taught by Eric Morg, which is an electrician for JSO. The individual provides 3 hours worth of own in the classroom training that they receive, and the other remainder of the 10-hour day is hands-on experience with that instructor. So they're actually performing the task when these individuals hit this, when they're leaving from our facility. It's a little bit different than what you would receive, say, at Tulsa Welding School or something like that. The curriculum that's taught would be basically some of the same curriculum that would be taught at Tulsa Welding School, SHIELD, in regards to the welding side of it. They perform the bend test. They perform classroom setting. They're doing tasks hands-on. With the graduation aspect of it, when we get into that category, you see the changes from that person beginning that course to the very end of it. The difference that it's made into them, oftentimes it's recognized immediately by the family of their demeanor changing, and we track that individual from once they leave from the jail setting for basically for a year. Has a very low recidivism rate of return in reference to these individuals coming back into our system. That's what makes it so beneficial. The problem that we run into is the actual staffing levels, not having enough staff to perform all the tasks that we need to get. The programs work great, but we're limited in the number of people we can to put towards those resources.
What is your staff deficiency right now? And is it like in the budget, or?
Yeah, we are budgeted for the number of officers, but currently probably over 180, 190 vacancies in corrections. So we have to kind of prioritize where we hold a vacancy at, security obviously being number one. Got to make sure, maintain security of all the facilities. So unfortunately, sometimes some of these other areas have to hold a vacancy. So ideally, I think what Chief Prescott is saying, if we had the manpower, we could run probably more classes, more people in a class, those type of things.
Those instructors teaching that class as well also have the task of performing on the facility itself of maintaining the electrical side of it, plumbing. The course, like the National Center for Construction Education and Research, covers HVAC. It covers plumbing. It covers electrician. It covers welding.
So is there, like, are there, how often is there an instructor in the place?
They work hands-on with the instructor.
Yeah, but I mean, like, is there every day? So I do want to verify. So if you are at the Montgomery Correctional Facility, are you staying there full-time, or are you staying in the main detention center downtown?
They're staying there full-time, okay, in regards to it. While they're in the program, they're at the facility itself, housed at the facility. Those individuals are working with the instructor day in and day out. They check them out as a work crew. They're assigned with that individual throughout that day, performing tasks such as maybe working on lights with inside the facility. Say if there was an outage that's identified, we put it on maintenance log. Those individuals would actually be individuals performing those tasks with that instructor and learning how to change a balance out and things of that nature.
What can you get actual certifications and any of the TIG, MIG welding? Can you get any kind of major certifications that can help you kind of move forward in your career?
Yes, sir. That is provided with those individuals as they're leaving, the number of work hours they completed in that particular field, where they're at in reference to the training. If they've received MIG training that they've received, that's part of the BEND test. With the NESR side of it, that's a national center of registration that's performed. So they are able to get that certification anywhere in the world and utilize it. And potential employers can pull that back up, and they're given a card at the time of when they're released to provide to those employers. But in addition to that, those instructors that's teaching that take passion in what they're doing, and they're also providing the contact information so that potential employer that could be out there looking for that individual can reach out to them and speak directly to them in reference to hiring that individual. And they can kind of give them a background in reference to what they performed on the facility, what kind of projects they worked on, and multiple, whether it be carpentry skills, whether it be an electrician side of it, how many hours and so forth of that nature they perform.
Do you ever have sort of a tracker for individuals that go through the program and maybe graduate, how many of them either return or get a job, you know, within 12 months of
we do.
Leaving the program? Okay.
We do track that information. We retain that information. We maintain that information. We track them for up to a year. That's on that recidivism aspect of it. This would be one of the student handbooks. Mm-hmm. If y'all would like to take a look at it, it's available to you. Just present it with me today.
Can you tell us about these numbers?
Off the top of my head, I would need to look at the numbers themselves, but I can tell you that the recidivism rate is very low, meaning that there's only a few that return. Like we also partner with like Canines for Warriors, which is referred to as the Pause for Change program. That's a 10-week course in which they go through. They're learning parenting skills and things of that nature. They're also keeping track records in reference to the training that they would receive in reference to writing, filling out resumes. All that's pertaining directly to that individual. We also bring in the Jacksonville Reentry Center personnel to help find adequate jobs for those individuals prior to their release. So a lot of times there may be a potential employer out there that's reached out to us. We'll provide those individuals participating in the program with a list of jobs that's currently out there available to them to try to help them find that gainful employment so when they hit the street, they're ready to move into the next process.
Do you and now I'm speaking more probably, I don't know, theoretically, can you potentially tell us how many individuals have a home to go back to when they're released from from the Montgomery Center? I guess, and sort of in general, right? I mean, like, how many individuals have a stable household to come to when they're released from their sentence? I mean, do we see that as a major impediment?
We do help them, or we help them through JREC in regards to finding adequate housing and things of that nature. So there are some of those benefits that we can provide to them, like yes. helping them obtain a driver's license or a bus pass and things of that nature. The number I cannot give you off the top of my head at this point.
Sure. No, but I mean, I guess just from your from all of your experience, frankly, you know, do you think that's one of the reasons why we see anyone kind of reenter the criminal justice system? Is it that they don't have a stable household to come back to?
Some of the homeless does play a role in that side of it.
I think it is a factor, because I think if you have a good support network when you get out, then you're probably less likely to recidivate, come back into our system. But, you know, there's so many factors involved with that, whether it's housing or family dynamics, those type of things all come into factor. And I don't know how much of that we track. Like, when you get released, who are you going to, you know, is it a nuclear family, a blended family, those kind of things.
Okay.
I don't know if we really track those. But.
Another one of our programs is Thinking for Change, and that addresses a lot of those questions as to where are they going to go once they get back out in society. Is it where they're going? Do they have that support, and are they going to repeat? Because if you're, say, a drug addict, mm-hmm. and you go back to that same neighborhood that provided you your drugs, 9 times out of 10, you are going to recidivate and come back in. So as Chief Prescott said, we have other resources that assist in helping these individuals get housing along with jobs prior to them getting out, so they won't be forced to go back to those conditions that they came from.
I wouldn't mind hearing from some of these groups, Thinking for Change. I believe we have the Bail Project coming up in the next couple of meetings, and then even JREC. I mean, I was about to say, yeah, like I know we've talked about JREC in the past. I just don't know if we've had anyone kind of come in here and talk to that. Are there any, I mean, the fact that we've got 180 to 190 vacancies, I can see that that's got to be a major factor in all of this. Can you kind of explain to me the difference, even if it's structurally, and what the, I almost called it the PFARM, Montgomery and the main jail. Like, what is structurally the major difference between the two of them? I assume that Montgomery is probably not a 9-story building.
No. I'll go into detail with that.
Please.
Montgomery is broke up into separate housing units. The main area for housing would be what we refer to as the North Unit. That is made up of 4 different buildings. Each one of the dorms holds 69 individuals in regards to the 3 housing unit portion of it. The one of the buildings is what's referred to as the intake and process and classification areas. That portion is done once they're entering into the facility. We're evaluating those individuals. That would also be where attorneys would meet with their clients and things of that nature. B building, which would be referred to as the south unit of the facility, and C building. Those two units, B building holds 180 individuals, where C building holds 90 individuals. And you're looking at 276 in each one of the main housing units. We do follow a model, and this is one of the things I wanted to state, since she said thinking for change. We followed a model of transitioning from jails to community. That is the program that we normally follow in reference to these programs.
We've got a ton of questions. The composition of the Montgomery Correctional Center with respect to the inmates, the most recent numbers that I saw, there are about 700 units, 695 inmates, give or take, in there.
I can even give you the breakdown of the sentencing at this point in time. Currently, we have 292 individuals sentenced at MCC of the 682 as of this morning.
So, yeah, and a good number of those are unsentenced.
Correct. And
which really belong at the pretrial detention center.
Yes, sir.
And so the programs you just talked about really then aren't available to them, are they?
No, sir.
Because of the fact that they don't meet the minimum requirement of 120 days of sentencing in that process.
Well, so most of them haven't been sentenced at all at that point.
That's what I mean, yeah, obviously. So I think that's really important to appreciate as it relates to this. Those with misdemeanors or non-felons, do they have access to the programs? Because according to this, about 190 or so are misdemeanor felons or non-violent felons.
If they're sentenced, if they're county sentenced, then those individuals would all have access to it. If they're state sentenced, those individuals are usually waiting on to be transferred.
Sure.
And those individuals would be housed at pretrials in most instances. Unless it becomes to a point where pretrial becomes overpopulated, and we have to do a mandatory move to MCC in reference to housing that particular group of individuals.
So I think you just said how many of them are sentenced inmates in there that qualify for the program. Let's put it that way.
We have currently 292 this morning that's currently sentenced.
292. Who qualify for one of these recidivism programs?
The vast majority of those would qualify for
and,
some.
And how many of them actually, of that ballpark, how many percentage-wise, how many of those actually participate in the program?
Well, every inmate that's sentenced is required to work in regards okay. to the when they receive that sentence, and that's one of the responsibilities they may have. Some of them, they're assigned to different work tasks on the facility. They may be assigned to basic kitchen, and that's how what would lead them into the into work program itself to learn those culinary skills at that point. Laundry, the main functions. I didn't speak on the textile and alterations. That's where they learn to sew and build mattresses and things of that nature.
So as terms of the facility itself, it sounds like some of these programs are off-site.
A vast majority of MCC population on the inmate side of it work outside into the community itself.
Correct.
They may be working with the blight in reference to cleaning up in different zones or different areas of the city itself,
right.
or
so,
districts.
So as it relates to the facility, I assume there needs to be classroom space. So there's got to be some obviously some operation as far as the recidivism within the facility. That's what I'm just understanding is what do you have, and is I appreciating the staffing challenge across the board, but in terms of space and opportunities and resources to provide these programs as part of the facility, where are you on that?
We currently have 2 classrooms on the facility itself that we utilize for the training of the inmates in regard or the participants within inside these programs. depending on the need for it. We also have the Canines or Paws for Change, Canines for Warriors partnership for that building as well that we utilize for the training of other participants with inside of that program.
So do you have sufficient capacity for those kind of for these kind of programs in terms of facilities? I'm talking about staffing right now.
Currently, for the number of individuals that that are teaching these programs, these instructors, we would have sufficient room for that. But if we were ever to expand any one of these programs,
so
we would need additional
space.
You're
at capacity right now. If you're looking to expand programs, you'll probably need at least another meeting space that allows that to happen.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Assistant Chief Prescott. Other than JREC, do you have relationships, for example, with Operation Good Hope or Prisoners of Christ? How do y'all interact? Are you pretty much focused with JREC?
So an example would be like the Clara White Foundation. We donate in regards to being a 501(c). If we're in the Sewing for Change, so anything that's grown on the facility would be donated to different entities within the city to help with food banks and things of that nature. So that items would be collected. We teach that portion of a program out there as well, the horticulture aspect of it, where we're going to teach them plant biology and things of that nature. It is a 10-week course that they would spend on that side of it. We partner with the Northeast Florida Builders Association.
That's my next.
Those individuals go into a four-year apprenticeship in regards to it, in addition to receiving education on their side once they're released from our facility. So these are all just some of the ones that we partner with at this point.
Okay.
Travis Bowles, or JSA Travis Bowles, he's also connected in with the Welders Associations and things of that nature. So he's always looking for avenues to find a potential employer for one of these individuals out on facility grounds.
So can you kind of talk to me about what why are there two very far away facilities? Like, why is there the pre-detention in the jail and then the Montgomery? Has the Montgomery been there for 50 years, 100 years? Like, what is the, what's kind of the history of why? I'm sorry, I don't know. I'm sorry.
They're not in
I'm sorry, guys.
That's good.
Montgomery Correctional Center is the oldest of all the facilities within the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Pre-trial was built well after that. Montgomery is a facility that's very vast on the land aspect of it. It's spread out over a large area. I would consider it probably a lot better than what the pretrial would be at this point because of the multiple floors and things of that nature.
Sure.
It's a lot easier to maintain. We have our own building maintenance personnel that's on the facility. Those are the instructors hands-on. It definitely benefits us in that regard, especially for these programs. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be able to offer them.
And I just want to make sure, so these instructors, are they correctional officers or are they individual? Okay.
Okay. A lot of those individuals.
I want to make sure. I thought, you know, I felt like the two were kind of being confused.
We have both.
Okay.
So some of the individuals in these programs are being taught by correctional officers. Some of the individuals in these programs are taught by our civilian personnel. JSO has a number of civilian personnel within the maintenance department that are, there's basically five individuals that would teach the main curriculum of the NESER program, or National Center for Construction Education and Research. The Paws for Change program is taught by officers. The horticulture or Sewing for Change is taught by officers. The textile is taught by officers.
I mean, not to speak ill of any officers, do they have expertise in textiles, dog training, or I forgot what the first one was? Horticulture.
We are the example for most sheriff's offices in regards and state prisons for the canine program.
Okay.
Multiple years of experience in regards to
it. Okay.
We welcome anyone that wants to come and look at the programs out there.
I guess I just don't look at TK and assume that he's a horticulture guy. You know, so that's why I'm, you know, just making sure, right?
That's a fair assessment. Fair assessment.
I don't see him hoeing the field.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this sounds good. I do want to go to the facility if that's possible, especially if
Absolutely.
There is an intake portion as well. That's something that we are exploring.
When you hear gunfire out there, it's where the police firing ranges
yeah.
right next to it behind it. So.
But I thought you were just going to tell me that's the north side.
just in case.
Yeah, a ton of. Yeah. All right.
To go back, Councilman Peluso, I can have Chief Prescott. We can pull those numbers for the various programs so you can see the actual rates of recidivism because that's something we're always looking at. Like if a program has a very high recidivism rate, is it beneficial? You know, but I think the NESER is phenomenal. When I found out about it when I came over, how much it's done. And so we have a JSO plumber, but he's also teaching them plumbing to fulfill that module requirement while he's also doing maintenance for us. So it's showing them how to fix toilets and that stuff while on site repairing our stuff, but they're also getting their credits for their module to get that accreditation when they get out and get a construction job, which you know now is a booming industry right now.
Mm-hmm. Do we, if I am a group or a nonprofit or even a company that may want to, you know, start partnering with JSO, like what's the way for them to do that? To kind of approach you guys and say, hey, I've got this program that I want to institute. Like, do you guys have a constant cycle?
Yes, we're constantly getting new nonprofits that want to come in and help out. So usually if it comes to me, I filter it to the assistant chiefs or the chief over that program or that area. Like if it's something with reentry stuff, then it would go to Chief Pascal, and then she can vet it with her people to see, oh yeah, we do have a need in that area, or we have already have nonprofits that, you know, are wanting more. So we, you know, take it on a need basis. If we definitely have a need, then we vet them and make sure we can use them and make sure it's beneficial for the people coming back to the community.
And are all these programs under you, Chief Prescott?
The ones I've spoke about today, yes.
Okay. All right. Are there other recidivism-based or rehabilitation-based programs that maybe you're not a part of that you still kind of work with in one way or another?
I'm over the programs unit. I think Lieutenant Fletcher, who's my programs lieutenant, she actually spoke on one of the other committees mm-hmm. a few weeks ago.
Okay.
But we have a list of programs. Some programs are court ordered, of course, but we have programs that the inmates volunteer to be in as well, which I have a list of some of those and some descriptions of those.
What are, you know, in all the programs you just described, they are for the most part only at Montgomery, or could it be, go ahead.
Each one of the facilities have different programs at each one.
Okay.
Say, SAT or substance abuse treatment and Matrix would be a program out of CTC, or Community Transition Center. Montgomery Correctional Center will be known for its NESER, Into Work,
Pause
for Change, the textile aspect of it. Those would be the main programs for MCC, Hold a Culture, Sewing for Change. Those would be the main programs for MCC.
So is it just kind of luck of the draw if you are at that facility and you have access to those things, or if I'm in the main jail and I show an affinity towards welding, how do I find myself at Montgomery? How does that work?
Basically, what we work off of is the inmates have a ability to submit a request via a tablet to identify these individuals that may want to participate in their programs. Then we would look at their overall scores, identify the possibility through their proxy score in reference to them the recidivism rate for those individuals, potentially coming back into our environment. Then we would select those individuals to come to the facility if they're sentenced to meet the criteria for it. There are certain charges that we would not place in some of the programs because of the fact of escape risk and things of that nature.
And I'm trying to harken back to what you mentioned, Councilmember Boylan. So if you are a felony conviction, are you able to do any of these programs?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Monet, do you have any questions? Actually, I also want to make note we have Judge Salem here with us today as well. Thank you, Judge, for being here.
Good morning. Hey, I do have a question for
Please.
The officers. It's somewhat related to what they're talking about. Good morning, everybody. I don't know what the city's plan is regarding having multiple facilities like they have now. Obviously, Montgomery was meant to be for people who were sentenced to go to versus having people who still have pending issues in the courthouse. If it's the plan to have multiple facilities, is there any talk about having the jail constructed to where there is permissible virtual appearances for court versus having them transported back and forth depending on the nature of the issue and case at hand?
Your Honor, I believe I could probably jump in on that. I think that's something that we discussed quite a bit, especially as we did our tour of the courthouse. I think that we're going to, in conjunction with Chief Judge and with State Attorney's Office and the Public Defender's Office, we'll probably kind of come up with some kind of position, as well as working with the other working groups, to figure out how many rooms in any sort of new jail that we may build, that we'll probably be able to work towards that. I mean, I think as we look at the next 30 years of what the criminal justice system is going to look like, I envision, whether we like it or not, there will be probably a larger Zoom or not in-person process. Whether or not we know exactly what that looks like today, I don't know. But if there's any more comments you want to make towards that, Councilmember Boylan.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Judge Salem, thank you for the question. Rightly or wrongly, we've kind of tasked the respective working groups to focus on specifically their topic areas. And when we come together as a group, we'll have the kind of conversation you just talked about. What kind of facilities? We're looking at disparate facilities at different locations. We're looking at a campus style. Obviously, when we talk about adjudication and intake and that whole process, does that need to be centralized? Does it need to, you know, some adjacency to the courthouse? As apart from those who have already been sentenced, they don't necessarily need to be in a centralized location, much like we have now with Montgomery. But that those conversations are going to take place once we have the collective of reports from the respective working groups and start focusing on what kind of facility or facilities and the locations for them.
And if I could just weigh in, I am wholeheartedly in favor of that. It's just a very inefficient system we have right now where we load 100 to 200 inmates up every day to haul them to the courthouse, some of them for a five-minute attorney visit, to sit in a room for 8 hours for that five-minute visit for us to then take them back. I would much rather put them in a room where they can have access to their attorneys or to the court without having to physically move them, because it's a logistical nightmare, manpower intensive, risk for escape is higher when we're moving them back and forth, liability on us in case they get in a car crash. Just so much better if we could have them just walk to another building and hop on a Zoom or WebEx or whatever and hear their court hearing, especially if the court hearing is being passed. It's a very antiquated system we're using, and I'm ready to move forward with it to, you know, best use of our resources for the court, the citizens, and the sheriff's office.
Charlie, I know you want to weigh in.
This will be an intense discussion because I understand that there may be a place within the system for video appearances of defendants. But I think our experience during COVID indicates that insofar as the resolution of cases is concerned, it was disastrous. And you only have to look at the case counts and I'll provide those to you from March of 2020 until about 9-10 months later. We went over a 50% increase of filed felony cases because of the difficulties of resolving cases remotely. But that's a discussion we'll have, and mm-hmm. and how we accommodate efficiency on the standpoint of the sheriff's office and getting people to and from, and how we promote the resolution of cases. It's going to be a long discussion for another day.
If I can just jump in, I didn't mean to.
Open a can.
Something more than I intended. It was simply brought in, nor am I advocating for en masse virtual appearances whatsoever. I lived through the COVID environment, so I know what Mr. Cobra's talking about. I'm not in favor of that whatsoever. I just think it should be a talking point. And some, whether it's this work group or another work group, I talked to Councilmember Peluso about it. Since this dealt with adjudication, which is somewhat in what I do, you know, several days a week, I thought it was a pertinent topic, given that the officers were talking about multiple jail imprints and how it came up, how maybe a third of the people at MCC are only sentenced, and two-thirds are coming back and forth across town for appearances. So I just wanted to put it out there. I didn't mean to open up a hornet's nest, but I think it's an important conversation to have at some point.
Well, it's exactly the conversation for this working group, so I do. And that's why we left it for Councilmember Peluso to address.
It's important to talk about, because I think any new facility will probably have some kind of multimedia room or multipurpose room, or at least a couple of them that can maybe work on the technology that exists today and hopefully can adapt to future technologies in the future. I mean, who knows? Maybe we have hologram technology in the future. I don't know. But, you know, it's, I think it's important to at least discuss if we are going to build something new, and you know, all indicators are that there might be in the next couple of years. So thank you, Judge, for that. You know, I don't know what Judge Kofor is going to do to me after this, though.
I'll say my piece and others will decide.
So to this end, Chief Prescott, you know, I need you to answer the tough question while you have two individuals next to you with more stars than you. You know, wish lists, items and or in general, I mean, do you feel as though the what we have today, is it in the best interest for making sure that we have individuals coming through and walking out better than they came, and they're able to kind of to live a better life or be better members of society? If we do we have such an incredible system now, or does it need substantial changes or alterations to make sure we can expand on the programs we have and get better? Or do you think, like, no, we're doing the right stuff now?
I think that the system that we currently have are working. And what I mean by that, I think they're great systems. The problem is we don't have enough of them or enough of the individuals to provide that training to them. And the individuals leaving from the facilities are leaving a lot better than what they come in. And we keep records in reference to the recidivism rate, and we'll let the records speak for themselves in reference to the return on those investments that we put into those individuals. And I would welcome anyone in the room to kind of see what Montgomery has to offer to these individuals, and see the passion that these individuals is performing these instructions and teaching these individuals in reference to the training, to come out and see it firsthand, and see the difference that it's making in those individuals' lives. And we know that it's going to change when they hit the street.
So as it relates to facilities, I think we had this conversation already, you know, expanding the facilities would create the opportunity for greater, more programs. And does the Montgomery location have the capacity for an additional space to accommodate these programs? If we built something out there, is there room to build out there to do that with?
Montgomery's over 400 acres, so yes, sir, there's room to build out there.
All right, we just need a couple of them. So, yeah. So there is, the capacity is there. So in the context of if we continue to use, and I didn't hear a hue and cry with respect to what we're doing with the other facilities, some immediate facility needs out there. It seems like you've got it pretty well in hand in terms of the operation of the facility, of the existing facilities. Is that a fair statement?
The facility is very, very vast in regards, and it's ever-changing. There are programs that we are currently looking at that we would love to start up. We just don't have the capacity to do it.
The question really was with respect to the existing, the status of the existing facility or the condition of the existing facilities. As you know, later this afternoon, we're going to have a meeting to talk about some of the immediate needs of the pretrial detention center and the police memorial building. That has not been part of this conversation today. So I'm just curious to know, are you able to maintain the facility, the condition of the facility to do what it needs to do?
All the buildings, pretty much, we're maintaining most of the buildings, but the buildings are older. They're much like,
sure,
they're a lot older than what the pretrial is, so there are some of the buildings that have leaks and things of that nature.
Got it.
That we need improvements in regards to.
Sure.
So are there any, and this just dawned on me, what in terms of mental health services are there up at the Montgomery Center? Like, do you have counselors that kind of come in and do regular mental health checks on individuals? Do we have people that are going through, you know, regular counseling? Is that a normal thing that goes on up there?
That is one of the challenges we face at Montgomery Correctional Center.
Okay.
We currently have mental health counselors come out twice per week in regards to seeing individuals. If we experience an individual that's having issues at Montgomery Correctional Center, we end up transferring that individual back immediately to the pretrial in reference to seeing a mental health counselor, unless that mental health counselor is going to be out there on that particular day.
So, I mean, right, given that you've got hundreds of people there, is it one individual that comes twice a week, or is it 45 individuals come twice a week, or is it individualized per person?
It really hinges upon the number of individuals that may be experiencing mental health episodes. It can vary on any given week. We do track that. In a lot of situations, the individual may be self-harm, or the individual may be experiencing a bizarre behavior inside of a dorm. The difference at Montgomery Correctional Center is that a lot of the dorms out there are set up in an open bay dorm style. So the 69 individuals would be all living, cohabitating in a room similar to this here for an open bay to kind of give a perspective of it. There's beds set up inside of there, toilets along the edges of the walls. It's a lot different than what you would see at the pretrial. The description would be lower level, would be an identification of an open bay dorm.
They don't have the individual cells at MCC like they do downtown.
Understood.
On the floors.
Is there so you will get mental health care if you show a mental health episode, basically. You can't just say like, hey, I feel depressed today. Let me talk to a counselor.
We have medical staff on hand to evaluate these individuals, and that determination is oftentimes made by medical that, hey, this individual needs to be returned back to the pretrial in reference to the mental health capacity.
How many medical folks are up there?
On any given day, there's at least 4 to 5 per shift.
4 to 5 per shift, okay. Is there any more?
I'm good.
Any closing thoughts from you, Chief Goff, or Director Goff?
I appreciate y'all's time and looking into this and trying to help us all make it a better system. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Is there any other specific discussion that you guys kind of want to go into? I know that I just texted with Brooks, my chief of staff. We definitely want to bring in thinking for change. Definitely want to bring in the Bell Project. I want to see if we could find a few other national recidivism programs that have worked with the criminal justice systems and maybe some other states to see. Yeah, I'm sure they're doing a lot of what we're doing. I just want to see what their processes look like, especially if we build another jail. And actually, to go back to another question, you just mentioned that there is this culinary program. Like, where are they working in the? Are they just working in the normal kitchen that you guys have in Montgomery, or are they, you know? And are they just prepping the meals for everybody, or are they doing other stuff in there that are kind of like a little bit more advanced?
Well, the Into Work program itself is designed so that it can lead into like fresh favorites and things of that nature. So they're prepping meals in reference to the inmate population, but they may also serve in reference to like it's mainly directed towards the inmate population itself. One avenue for them would be is if they were transferred to, say, CTC or Community Transition Center, those individuals could end up on a work release program serving at maybe Olive Garden or somewhere like that. It gives them that certification in regards to being that serve safe certification.
So, and that's something else we should probably talk about, work release. We should get somebody in here who is that who's that managed by?
That is under Chief Bliss at CTC.
Okay. Wouldn't mind having them come swing by maybe at the next meeting.
Okay.
And just kind of talk about what work release looks like and again, what kind of numbers those look like. You know, anytime we ask you to bring someone, bring numbers on what happens after inmates kind of leave the facility. Well, yeah, you know, JREC, of course, I want to bring them in here, but, you know, this is something that we need to make sure that we're doing our due diligence. This is going to be a very large-scale capital project. We want to make sure that we've got facilities in there that can help make sure, again, that nobody comes back there. That should be the main goal. Are there any more discussions? Go ahead.
Just real quick, and with respect to the scheduling, I want to let you know that we have we had targeted mid-January for the collective, for the midpoint meeting. Mm-hmm. Because of the holistic facilities, we're going to back that out to the end, probably to the beginning of February. So if we have need for an additional meeting of your committee or your working group, just want to let you have the capacity to do so. I know you've got a very aggressive calendar already, mm-hmm. but if you find the need for an additional meeting mid-January or so, you'll have the opportunity to do so.
Understood. I do want to, you know, because I've had a few conversations with folks about CIP budgeting in general. I have been told that March is when a lot of the projects kind of already need to be. So that, I don't know how that works, that meshes with you guys, or if you're talking with budget about what kind of numbers we might want to put in into future outlays for CIP.
That's a conversation with the administration to see how far they want to go in terms of moving this forward. I expect if you see any money in next year's budget, it's going to be for the design and implement and not construction at this point in time.
Yep.
I fully expect that's going to be a focus of the sheriff's office and others, administration, to say, okay, what do we need to do next in terms I will share, and we've heard this time and again from Gilbane and DHCR and others, that the process we're going through puts us way ahead of the game and with respect to many of the facilities they've built in the past. Folks like the sheriff show up and say, okay, we need a new facility. What do you need? I don't know. You know, and so we're getting to the I don't know questions answered now, which makes hopefully the work for HDR and others much easier once, you know, we finish doing the work that we do to make a determination, however muddy it may be, what our needs are. And we certainly are identifying a lot of those good things right now.
So you're saying I'm doing a great job.
You're doing a great job.
All right,
stick to the facilities. You're not a program guy here, okay?
I know, but we got to make sure that there's room for those programs.
Absolutely.
And what, you know, kind of how to make sure that if we budget for future programs that we're not ignoring. It's the same thing with even the stadium now.
Well, I think we are going to impact opportunities for programs. I mean, yep. This is and we shaped some of that. Mm-hmm. If in fact we put a larger infirmary at the pretrial detention center, it changes the way they operate.
Absolutely.
And if we expand the opportunity for greater recidivism number of programs out there, because we give them the capacity to do so, it changes their operation.
Very much so. And I just want to make sure that we're at least exploring what what others have done, how they do it, and the best way to kind of make sure that as we're building a giant big building, that we're also ensuring that it's got programs that are in the best interest of those that are being served in that place, as well as the corrections officers, right? I mean, I'm seeing 180 to 109 vacancies. That's a very troubling number. It's got to be. I'm sure mm-hmm. you guys know that better than us. So how do we make sure that we're also building a facility that's in the best interest of making sure we have people sticking around, you know, and things of that nature. Were you about to say something, Judge?
No. I had just to let the group know that I had been compiling notes, and I kind of need to update them, I guess, with the notes that Tyler's provided us, but I provided them to staff since I know I really can't communicate with y'all. In terms of what I'm hearing,
just me. You can talk to everyone else.
Okay. Well, I'll talk with everybody else then. Yeah. And I'll share these with Director Goff, just some of the things that I'm seeing. I was very impressed with the presentation from the HDR on the Franklin County. A lot of really good ideas. So.
Absolutely. I believe we have one public comment card, as I can see right there. Sorry. I'm going to guess it's Colonel Oliver. There, Colonel Oliver, please come up. You have 3 minutes, sir. I know you probably have a few comments on this, so I'm eager to hear them.
Yes, my name is Colonel Oliver. I've been to prison. I've served other than probably three wards. And one of the ones I learned a lot, great deal through is a troubleshooting one. When I'm inside the city council chamber, I'm a troubleshooter. And when it comes down to your programming, you're not where you need to be. I want y'all to go back, go to the drawing board. Everybody with stars on you, from Prescott, Gall, Prescott, every last one of y'all need to be in a room talking about real programs. If I can't get FSCJ inside of that new facility, then you need to figure out some kind of coordination where you can have Northeast Florida Builders Association on site. The last meeting that I was at, one of your commanding lieutenants talked about a truck driving program. That needs to be a part of the conversation. A lot of what you're offering is maintaining your operation. A lot of what you're talking about is not real world skill sets. These are benefits to saving money of your operation from bringing in an outside contractor. But if you're going to work these inmates on your compounds, out there in the streets, you need to pay them. I'm against free labor. The thing about it is that this new facility will be built like a prison. And in certain states, they've outlawed a lot of bad habits. And one of the things that is very clear to me is that I want you to look at very seriously at education. I don't care how you, because it's going to cost this county a pretty penny to build it with taxpayer dollars. So I want y'all to know that I have the best interest in this and not seeing people of my color, of my community coming back into the system. And what I really want y'all to do is just take a good, ironclad look at what you're doing, because a lot of this just, it doesn't work. Because you doubled down three times about staff. Your primary focus is staff. My focus is the inmates that are in that facility. I'm trying to cut y'all budget some kind of way, and recessivism is the best way to do it. Bring it down. The less people you have in there, that means more savings to the taxpayers. And right programming contributes to that. If right now y'all don't have it. So if we got to bring in other organizations from other states, other communities within the state of Florida, Brooke, I want you to kind of like, I know y'all busy in that office and y'all get a lot of complaints, but I'm serious about that. And also, when y'all take a tour of McDonald's, don't just talk to the staff, talk to the inmates. But make sure that you're not talking to the inmates. You talk to the inmates that are not doing nothing. There are more people sitting around not doing nothing. Right. Now you're my time.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver. Please, Monet, go ahead.
Can I ask Mr. Oliver a clarifying question, if he's still at the podium?
Sure. I don't see why not. Mr. Oliver.
So I definitely, appreciate your perspective as someone who's directly impacted and has been and experienced the system. So I just want to clarify, you're saying that both the programs that are offered are not sufficient and or don't provide skills needed outside, and then I think what I heard the second part was that whoever's facilitating the training you're feeling is inadequate. So I know you mentioned bringing like FSCJ and East Florida Builders Association. Are you implying or stating that whoever's running these programs aren't skilled or qualified and should be outsourced? Because I'm on Zoom, so I'm going to clarify.
Well, Ms. Holder, I guess what I'm trying to say, the current programs that they have right now, no, they're not efficient. Number two, if there is another outside vendor that can come in, I'm in favor of it, but it's got to be state certified going through the Florida Department of Education. Something that these guys can take, or women can take with them into the free world and make high wages. I think that if Northeast Florida Builders Association come in, I'm in favor of it. If it's FSCJ, I'm in favor of it. But I want something that is realistically sound that can bring down recessivism rate. And that's one of my priorities. And those are my comments.
Any more questions, Bonnie? Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, one thing that I have heard of in other communities is an inmate advocate. I don't know if that's ever been discussed in any Florida jurisdiction. I just don't know. Have you ever heard of one?
I think I am it. I mean, yeah, they're different groups. I've heard of it, but we statutorily by rules, part of our role is to advocate for those who are in custody. So,
but even those that have already been sentenced.
Oh,
right. Yeah, like so. If you're in the jail for that year or longer, is there someone that they can talk to that's outside of the chain of command or outside of corrections? Maybe not like an IG, but like I don't know, an advocate. Like I don't know.
An ombudsman kind of
built to it. Yeah, kind of like an ombudsman. Actually, yes. So I don't. I've heard of them in other states. I just don't know if that's anything that's ever been explored here. I'm not here. I'm not here to. Is my time up?
Sorry. So all we're talking about here is creating an office for the person in case they
yes.
want
yes. to. Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And even then, it's just, it's just something that I'm pontificating.
No, I think it's a good idea. I didn't mean to.
No. And by the way, I've not interacted so much with the criminal justice system, so this is certainly, there will be times where I'll kind of come in with legitimate questions that I've just never had answered before or thought of in many cases. This is a very serious topic, and I want to make sure that we're doing our due diligence. Please, Councilman Bowling, any closing arguments?
That's good.
All right. That's all I have. Thank you all so much. This meeting is adjourned.
Y'all did a good job. I don't give y'all a lot of credit on a lot of things, but y'all be doing this.
So I'll be, hopefully I get there, comments are quick, and I'll just beeline it out of there.
Yeah. I definitely want to be in this. So I told you I would.
You've got to do it sort of.
It sounds
appreciate
seeing
you.
So it may be something y'all might want to touch.
I wouldn't mind. All these.
How are you?
Oh, I'd like to go to
town. So 11:30?
11:30 here, yeah. It won't be a long meeting.
You are expecting Jimmy for each working groups here. I'd sort of give a quick update as to where you are.
Yeah, Brooks and I were talking about that. I'm ready to kind of do something down at 30.
Excellent. But to the point you made earlier, though, I just want to make sure.
And I know that he's wanting to do a meeting.
We
talk about everything. Take a formal list of what it's going to be, and then we get back to the full committee.
There are a couple of things in mind that I've missed, and I picked up from your notes of that last meeting.
As you work through it, I want to make sure you send them to me as many copies as you want. If you just stick a date on it, that way I can just monitor what you're most up to date on.
Right. Well, I usually change them. I just want to make sure I do like a show.
And I will keep track of them. And then him, me, and Brooks meet every couple of weeks, so I'll start bringing those.